Devotees have commented, and I also feel, that I'm not able to express everything I want to say in each class because of the number of questions. So I will suggest that we keep our questions for the end of the class. And many of the questions actually relate to subjects that come later in the course. So you can, if there's time to ask, then you can ask. But otherwise, you can write the questions on a piece of paper. And I'll answer the question if it's appropriate in the class, either the next day or whenever the appropriate time comes. And anyway, if anyone approaches me after class with questions, I always try to answer anyway. And if you feel that the question is very important and that you won't be able to follow the discussion unless you get the answer right away, then you could send up a piece of paper. Okay, we are discussing Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.15, which is Srimad Bhagavatam 11.28. Who can say what is the subject of the verse under discussion? Yes. What makes someone eligible for devotional service? So yesterday, we discussed one word, yadrichaya. But you will be happy to know that we didn't finish the discussion. There's still more to be said about the word yadrichaya. The general meaning of the word is independent, that bhakti is independent, and she manifests herself wherever and whenever she likes. But she does not manifest herself, or I should say that she manifests herself through a medium. And what is the medium through which she manifests herself in most cases? Yes, through the medium of the devotee. When the devotee is inspired by Bhakti Devi within the heart, then the devotee prays to Krishna to give mercy to the person. In other words, originally we discussed whether the mercy of Krishna can be the cause of the appearance of bhakti. And we concluded that if Krishna gave bhakti to some and not to others, it would be a defect in Krishna, or it would be a contradiction for Krishna, because he is the father of every living entity and he has to be equal to everyone. Then we discussed that the cause could be the mercy of the devotee. And in the case of the Madhyama Bhakta, the bestowal of mercy is actually one of his functions. And in the bestowal of mercy, he is supposed to discriminate to whom to give mercy and to whom not to give. But when some soul receives the mercy of the devotee, then the mercy of Krishna follows. Because Krishna is very affectionate to the devotees. So if some devotee prays to Krishna to give mercy, then Krishna will give mercy to fulfill the desire of the devotee. Lord Chaitanya had one devotee named Vasudev Dutta. And Vasudev Dutta was so compassionate towards the fallen souls that he wanted them all to be liberated. And he thought that they can't be liberated as long as they have to suffer sinful reactions in the material world. So he appealed to Lord Chaitanya that he would accept all of the sinful reactions of all of the conditioned souls upon himself in order for them to be liberated. When Lord Chaitanya heard the appeal of Vasudev Dutta, his heart melted, his body trembled, tears came to his eyes, and he congratulated Vasudev Dutta. Vasudev Dutta was not making a show, but he actually meant it, that he was ready to suffer all the sinful reactions of all the conditioned souls in the whole universe. But Lord Chaitanya informed him that the fallen souls can be liberated even without your accepting the sinful reactions. Just by your desiring that they should become devotees, they will become devotees. Because if you pray to the Lord that they should become devotees, then the Lord will certainly respond. And when they become devotees, then naturally they will become free from sinful reactions. Because Krishna says, Sarva Dharman Parityaja Mamekam Saranam Vraja Aham Tvam Sarva Papebhyo Mokshayisyami. That if one surrenders to Krishna, Krishna delivers him from all sinful reactions. And we also read how even in the beginning stage of devotional service, one becomes freed from all types of sinful reactions. So Lord Chaitanya told Vasudev Dutta that if the Vaishnav prays for the mercy of Krishna for some soul, then he will become Vaishnav. And whoever becomes Vaishnav automatically becomes free from sinful reactions, and he becomes liberated. And Lord Chaitanya quoted one verse from the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, from the personified Vedas, where they pray to the Lord that, my dear Lord, all living entities are captured or imprisoned by the material energy, by your will. And similarly, by your will, you can order the material energy to release them. So when some devotee wants to give mercy to some soul, he prays to the Lord to give mercy, to bring the person to Krishna consciousness, or in other words, to give the person devotional service. For example, Kaliyanag, he had so many bad qualities, but his wives were devotees. And when his wives prayed to Krishna to give mercy to Kaliya, Krishna gave mercy. And thus Kaliya was delivered. He became devotee, actually. So this is actually the meaning of Yadrichaya. As someone said yesterday, bhakti comes from bhakti. It is true. Bhakti manifests herself whenever she likes or wherever she likes. But she uses the devotee as the medium. And bhakti, within the heart of the devotee, inspires the devotee to give mercy. And when the devotee gives mercy, then Krishna also gives mercy. And thus bhakti becomes manifest. Bhakti from the heart of the devotee and from the heart of Krishna in the form of mercy manifests bhakti in some fortunate soul. And bhakti, when bhakti manifests, the first stage of bhakti is Shraddha. The beginning stage of bhakti is Shraddha. So when the person receives mercy, specifically the person manifests Shraddha. Shraddha means faith in devotional service. Faith that simply by engaging in the service of the Lord, I will get everything. Even if I don't engage in jnana or karma or yoga or anything else. Because we're discussing the eligibility of the candidate for Uttama Bhakti. And Uttama Bhakti is jnana karmadi anavritam. It is without any mixture of karma or jnana or yoga or tapasya or anything else. Only bhakti. So for someone to be eligible for Uttama Bhakti, he has to have faith that only by engaging in devotional service, all of his ends will be served. And that he has no need of engaging in any other process like karma or jnana or yoga and so on. So that is the meaning of faith. But even if he has faith, because some people have theoretical appreciation of the value of devotional service, but they're too attached. And therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam says, not nirvino, nati sakto. They should not be too attached to material enjoyment. Neither they should be too attached to artificial renunciation. Because if someone is too attached to material enjoyment, he will be inclined towards karma. He will be inclined towards fruitive work for material enjoyment. And if someone is too inclined towards artificial renunciation or false detachment, he will go for jnana. But Uttama Bhakti is jnana karmadi anavritam. So therefore the person should not be too inclined towards material enjoyment or too inclined towards false detachment. He should be in the middle. Everyone has some tendency towards enjoyment and some tendency towards renunciation. But he should not be too much on either side. He should be in the middle. Then he is eligible for bhakti. He can give up the inclination towards karma or jnana. So, as we discussed yesterday, Guru Kripa Prasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Beach, by the mercy of Krishna and the Vaishnav, one gets the seed of bhakti. But we can only plant the seed in soil which will accept the seed. And We may have to prepare the soil. Actually, we want to give the seed of bhakti to everyone, but not everyone is ready to accept the seed of bhakti. So we have to prepare the soil. That means that if the person is too inclined towards material enjoyment or too inclined towards artificial renunciation, we have to break such inclinations, or at least weaken such inclinations. And then only can they take to bhakti. So when we preach, we may have to spend so much time just preparing the ground, breaking up the ground, moistening it, pulling out the weeds, pulling out the thicket, just to make it ready to receive the seed. Which means there's a lot of work. There's a lot of work in preaching. Very few people are ready to immediately accept bhakti. They have to be cultivated. But the goal is to give the seed. So when we preach, we have to break their material attachments and false detachments so that they can... And of course, faith is the basic thing. Create faith in the devotional process. Sometimes in the early days in America, young people would come to the temple in the mood of false detachment. They would come to the Sunday feast and they wouldn't want to eat because they had some vow not to eat sugar or not to eat products from animals like milk or cheese or yogurt, or so many diets they had. So we would have to break such false renunciation and say, this is Krishna Prasad, this is beyond avoiding sugar and ghee, and this is spiritual, and it's only one time, and so on and so on. And if they could give up such false renunciation, it helped them. So what to speak of people giving up false enjoyment? So this is the basic qualification of the person for devotional service. He shouldn't be too attached or too detached, and he should have faith in the process of devotional service, which is explained in the scriptures and by the devotees. And especially he should have the mercy of some devotee and Lord Krishna. Now, Rupa Goswami next explains that there are three categories of eligible persons. Not everyone is equally eligible. There may be many eligible persons, but some may be more eligible than others. So, the eligible persons are divided into three categories. Uttama, Madhyam, and Kanista. Uttama means superior or first class, Madhyam means intermediate or second class, and Kanista means inferior or third class. So the same words may appear in other contexts, like Uttama Bhakti, it means first class devotional service. So here, Adhikari means eligibility, and Adhikari means one who possesses eligibility. So the basic consideration in eligibility is faith, specifically faith in the scriptures about devotional service. So the three categories, Uttama, Madhyam, and Kanista, are graded according to degrees of faith, because that's the basic consideration of eligibility, faith in the scriptures. And with faith in the scriptures also comes knowledge of the scriptures. If we have faith and attraction, Shraddha actually means faith and attraction. So if we have faith and attraction, then we will have knowledge also. We will want to read the books. We will want to hear the discussions. So the Uttama Adhikari is described in 1.2.17, which comes on page 24 of the verse book. Shastra yukto chanipuna sarvata drida nischaya krodha shradho dikariya sabhaktav utamomataha. The right hand column of page 24 of the verse book. Shastra means in the revealed scriptures. Yukto means in logic. Cha also, nipuna, expert. Does anyone recognize the word nipuna from anywhere? Nana shastra vichara nipuna. The six Goswamis were expert in the shastras. So here, yukto doesn't mean logic independent of the scriptures, but it means logic on the basis of the scriptures. So the Uttama Adhikari, he has knowledge of the scriptures and he's expert in argument on the basis of scripture. And he can defeat any opposing view. And at the same time, dridha nischaya, he's firmly convinced. And prouda shraddha, he has deep faith. He is the highest class of eligible person for Uttama Bhakti. Then the next class, and the next page, ya shastra vish anipuna shradavansa tu madhyama. He is not so expert in scriptural argument. He knows the scriptures, and he's able to argue on the basis of the scriptures in many cases. But in some cases, he's not so expert that he can defeat the opposing argument. But even if he can't defeat the opposing argument, he still has strong faith in the process of devotional service. And he is not shaken in his conviction about devotional service. Shradhavan means full of faith. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that Shradhavan means faith not only in the scriptures, but also in the words of the spiritual master. And then next, Yo Bhavet Komala Shraddha Sakanishto Nigadyate. Komala means soft. flimsy, weak. One whose faith is not very strong, who is just beginning, should be considered a neophyte devotee. He has little knowledge of the scripture. He has some idea, but he has not made any systematic study of the scripture. And his faith is also weak. So if he meets some opposing argument, some strong argument against the conclusions of devotional service, he may be shaken. His faith may be shaken. But again, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that although his faith is shaken, he will recall the instructions of his spiritual master and remember his spiritual master, and thus console himself and rededicate himself to the process of devotional service. He doesn't actually give up the process and fall down. So we see the gradations in terms of faith and knowledge of the scripture. Uttama Adhikari has strong faith and conviction and knowledge of the scriptures, and he's capable to argue on the basis of the scriptures with logic. The Madhyamadhikari, he also has strong faith, not as strong as the Uttamadhikari, but he has strong faith to the extent that even if he's defeated in some argument, his faith is not shaken. And he has some knowledge of the scriptures, but not as much as the Uttamadhikari. And the Kanista Adhikari has little knowledge of the scriptures and weak faith. He can be shaken, means his faith can be shaken by opposing arguments. And if he consistently associates with non-devotees, then he can fall down. Because non-devotees will be either karmis or jnanis or yogis. And naturally they will speak about the benefits of karma or jnana or yoga. So if he associates with them too much, then he may think that karma is better than bhakti, or jnana is better than bhakti, or he has to mix karma with bhakti or jnana with bhakti. Then he falls from the platform of uttama bhakti. So that's why especially neophyte devotees have to be careful about associating with non-devotees, associating intimately with non-devotees. They can be influenced. Now, everyone should advance. In the next purport, Srila Prabhupada explains. A neophyte devotee believes that only love of Krishna or Krishna consciousness is very good, but he may not know the basis of pure Krishna consciousness or how one can become a perfect devotee. Sometimes in the heart of a neophyte, there is attraction for karma, jnana, or yoga. When he is free and transcendental to mixed devotional activity, he becomes a second-class devotee. When he becomes expert in logic and can refer to the shastras, he becomes a first-class devotee. So we should be making progress. A neophyte may fall down by associating with non-devotees, because he's not firmly convinced and strongly situated. The second class devotee even though he may not be able to support his position with Shastric reference, can gradually become a first-class devotee by studying the Shastras and associating with the first-class devotee. However, if the second-class devotee does not advance himself by associating with a first-class devotee, he makes no progress. It's on the next page, on page 26. It's not a purport to one of the verses from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It's a purport to one of the verses in Chaitanya Charitamrita that follows the discussion of Uttama, Madhyama, and Kanista. Now, yesterday, someone raised the question about the relationship of Uttama Adhikari, Madhyama Adhikari, and Kanista Adhikari with Uttama Bhagavat, Madhyama Bhagavat, and Kanista Bhagavat. And we should know the difference. Here, Rupa Goswami is giving the degrees of eligible candidates, Adhikaris. And the three verses from the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam give the three grades of devotees. So the two are not the same. Of course, sometimes Srila Prabhupada uses the word adhikari for bhakta in the case of Uttama, Madhyama, and Kanista. But we should know with reference to the context whether we're discussing grades of eligible candidates or grades of devotees.
How could someone be a Uttama Adhikari and not be a devotee?
Huh?
How could someone be an Uttama Adhikari and not be a devotee? Have such strong faith and be expert in
scripture? Of course he's a devotee.
How is he like a candidate? I don't understand. Even as a clipper.
Well, being eligible means that he's beginning the process. He has the eligibility, so he's beginning the process. And the general characteristic of eligibility is faith. But there are also degrees of faith. So Rupa Goswami is analyzing further that there may be many persons who are eligible for devotional service because they have faith. But according to the degree of faith, some are more highly eligible than others.
I see. So like a Uttama Adhikari, you would begin as a Kanishta Bhakta.
Not necessarily.
You can start.
Not necessarily. It depends on past development of devotional service. Because generally devotional service is a continuation from previous lives. So if one was advanced in the past life, then he will naturally have taste for devotional service, taste for Krishna Katha, and he will very quickly come to a higher stage of devotional service than someone who is not so advanced from past lives. This is actually mentioned at the end of the discussion of general characteristics of devotional service. That if someone has, that the real qualification for entering into devotional service is taste and, you know, faith and attraction. And if someone's taste is more developed, it's understood that he had been advanced in the past life. Okay, now we'll continue. Rupa Goswami discusses four classes of persons who take to devotional service with reference to one verse from Bhagavad Gita, which is quoted on page 28. Chatur vidha bhajanti mam
Jana sukritino arjuna artho jigyasur artharthi gyani cha paritarshaba. O best among the Bharatas, Arjuna, four kinds of pious men render devotional service unto me: the distressed, the desirer of wealth, the inquisitive, and he who is searching for knowledge of the Absolute. Now, these are persons who, by the association of pure devotees, or by the special mercy of Lord Krishna, can take to pure devotional service. In the beginning, they had some motive. But even someone who has some motive, if he gets the association of pure devotees, he can give up the other motives, he can give up the other processes, and take exclusively to devotional service. So these are conditions of persons before they come to pure devotional service. But they're all considered pious, sukritino. They're all considered pious because they come to the Lord. Although they may be in distress, but they come to the Lord for mitigation of their distress. Although they may be in want of something material, but they come to the Lord for their material want. And by the association of pure devotees, they can give up the material desire and take to pure devotional service. And same thing with the persons who are inquisitive, or even the ones who are seeking after the Absolute Truth, but who think that the Absolute Truth is impersonal. By the association of pure devotees, they can give up the tendency towards impersonalism and become themselves pure devotees. So we'll discuss one more very nice verse, which is on page 30. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1-22. Bhukti mukti spriha yavat pishachi hridi vartate tavat bhakti sukhasyatra katam abu yadayo bhavet. The material desire to enjoy the material world and the desire to become liberated from material bondage are considered to be two witches, and they haunt one like ghosts. As long as these witches remain within the heart, how can one feel transcendental bliss? As long as these two witches remain in the heart, there is no possibility of enjoying the transcendental bliss of devotional service. In other words, one may take to devotional service, but as long as he maintains desires for bhukti and mukti, means material enjoyment or material emancipation, he cannot relish the transcendental bliss of devotional service. One time Srila Prabhupada was speaking in Detroit, and he was saying that that we should aspire to be the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. And the more we become the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant, the sweeter devotional service becomes. So in Nectar of Devotion, while explaining the verse, Srila Prabhupada says that as long as one desires to become more and more important, either in the material sense or in the spiritual sense, he cannot really relish the sweet taste of devotional service. So if we're not relishing the nectar of Krishna consciousness, it may be due to desire either for bhukti or for mukti. But of the two, the desire for mukti is considered to be a greater impediment on the path of pure devotional service than the desire for bhukti. And therefore, the next chapter of Nectar of Devotion, after this come so many verses which establish the fact that if any devotee is free from the desire for mukti, he will be very much attracted by the activities of devotional service. There's so many activities in devotional service, especially Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. So if someone is free from the desire for liberation, he will be very much attracted by Krishna Katha, by chanting and hearing about Krishna. And then the next verses explain that if someone becomes attracted by Krishna, by talks about Krishna, or by Krishna in any way, then he will give up the desire for mukti, because he'll realize that the pleasure of bhakti is much greater. So even if he had some desire for mukti, he will give it up. So now I will give you a little homework. Now, you should have been reading the chapters of Nectar of Devotion, according to the sheet. So I would like you to outline the main points of chapters 4 and 5. And how you should explain how the theme of chapter 4 relates to the discussions in the introduction and the preceding chapters. And you should explain how the main theme of chapter 5 relates to the preceding discussions. And you should explain how the verses quoted in chapters 4 and 5 relate to the main themes of the chapters. There is a main theme to chapter 4. So you should explain how the verses relate to the main theme. And I will give you a hint that there's only one. Well, anyway, you figure it out. And then the same thing in chapter 5. There is one main theme in chapter 5 also. Now, the verses in chapter 5 seem to be more diverse and more variegated than the theme, than the verses in chapter 4. So you'll have to think a little more deeply how the variegated verses quoted in chapter 5 relate to the main theme. More deeply to understand what the main theme is, because the verses appear to be apparently covering a wide range of subjects. But Prabhupada, of course, has given the main theme in the title of the chapters. But you have to understand the title. But if you can understand the title, then you can understand the theme.